It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. And ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest. How special is he? He's so special, he has his own intro. And if you're a longtime listener, you'll know exactly who's in studio with me. Check this out.
It's me, dear friends, alive and kicking. Well, alive anyway.
I'll be kicking you with my jingle bells.
That's it. Kick the footless man.
You know, you walk into this stuff.
Oh,
you roll.
Oh, yes! Yes!
Awesome!
Well, when a fella comes back from the dead, I find that an occasion to stand up. Be counted.
It's not a film sociology
it's not
if I don't
hard.
Do a foot joke.
Well, I can see where it'd be difficult for a man of your stature to keep in touch with even half the people you know. Well, you know beautiful women, they encourage you 1 minute and cut the legs out from under you the next.
I'm not half the man I used to be.
Wow. Why is it that the guy in the wheelchair gets a film called The Sitter?
That's right. Richard Probst is here, the independent critic himself. How are you, sir?
I'm just dandy. I'm so excited
you
to be back.
You love the intro.
I love that intro.
For the record, it's Richard Probst approved, so you can't fire me.
That intro has helped me get my foot in the door. Thank you very much.
Your wheel in the door is more like
thank
it.
Thank you.
You know, I always forget, because I was not here for the joke with you and Gina and Kobe. Am I right? I was not here.
That is correct.
Who did that? Was that Kobe?
You know, I'm trying to think. I don't.
Because, or was it you? Because Gina, it wasn't obviously Gina because she didn't realize she was making the joke.
I think it was probably me. I'm prone to drum rolls.
You're a fast one.
I like to roll. We know that.
Yes, he's here. Richard Probst is here, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, it is the God, it's not really winter. It's the fall tenderness tour is a happening. Am I right?
What?
Isn't that true?
What?
You're the tenderness tour
I
of all people.
Yeah.
Mr. Warmth.
Well, you know, what I'm doing is I'm actually working on establishing a memorial labyrinth for child victims of violence here in Indianapolis right now. And so I'm kind of planning some special events and looking for some spaces. And so I'm kind of foregoing a long-distance wedding in favor of trying to get that project off the ground.
And, of course, with the labyrinth, you're not quite going in a circle.
I'm not quite going in. It's going to be heart-shaped.
Just a heart-shaped labyrinth.
I can finally say I have a heart.
Oh, that's not true. You have one. Come on.
Oh, come on.
I think for those who don't know Mr. Probst, and if you just know him by his film readings, well, there's a lot more to the man. But I think you let your dark side out in the film reviews.
Yeah.
And this show, by the way. So.
What?
This is where you get to unleash things.
This
apparently.
Is where, yeah, this is my venting place. This is my happy place, I think.
My bosses are so excited.
I'm amazed you can keep having me back.
Well, they haven't noticed it yet. Anyway, but it, of course, interestingly, we go back to the intro, but we heard, of course, the voice of Kenneth Branagh at one of his cinematic WTF moments. It says,
wow.
Love Loss. But Sir Ken is back in cinema. He is back at theaters. Or, I'm sorry, he's known as the director of Thor. Which is how you get films made sometimes.
Oh, I think so.
But there is a new version, or as we were talking off air. Yes, there are remakes. I like it, but because Sir Ken comes from the theater, I like to think of this as a revival because it has a Broadway feel to it. But there is a new version of Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express in theaters now, and Sir Ken is directing it. He's also starring in it as Hercule Poirot, the famous Belgian detective. Never forget that.
Belgian.
Not French. Not Belgian.
You're not a Hoosier, are you?
Heck no.
No, I was going to say, I've not been able to say that last name for like...
Poirot. Not Perot.
It's not Ross Perot?
It's not, you know what? And there was a TV movie of Murder on the Orient Express.
I remember that.
With Alfred Molina. And he makes reference to the political candidate of the similar sounding name. That's how dated that film was. But this is a new version of the famous Christie novel. There was, of course, a superior film version in 1974 with Albert Finney, directed by Sidney Lumet.
The good one, I like to call it.
Yes. And like the original, I guess we're calling it the original, there is a combination of big-name stars and stage actors combined in this. Besides Sir Ken, we have Michelle Pfeiffer, Josh Gad, Daisy Ridley. For you longtime Kenneth Branagh fans, Judi Dench and Derek Jacobi is in here, Willem Dafoe. A non-Tim Burton performance from Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp is playing.
In other words, it's not any good.
Okay. No, this one's. It's. I think I'm one of those. I think I celebrate Depp's performances if he's not working with Tim Burton and playing a crazy looking person, or he. It doesn't look like he's. Well, in this case, he's doing a role so he can support his island, like the film he did this summer. I think he actually wanted to work with the likes of Kenneth Branagh and Michelle Pfeiffer and those involved.
Wow.
Oh, Penelope Cruz is in this as well. Willem Dafoe, I think I mentioned. I think Willem Dafoe got a slightly bigger check for this while he was working on The Florida Story.
The Florida Project.
I'm sorry, The Florida Project,
yes.
Which I did not see.
The good film that he's done this year.
Oh, very good. Look at
Thank
that.
You.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to start off by saying I remember when the internet went crazy. The internet went bat spit crazy when they released publicity stills of this film. Now, for those who don't know, it's Hercule Poirot, the famous Belgian detective, is on a train, the Orient Express, going from Istanbul to someplace in Europe. I forget. But there was a murder on the train of a businessman played by Johnny Depp. Not really a spoiler alert. And, of course, you know, all of the suspects of colorful characters in one way, shape, or form. That's the gist of the story. But the publicity photos for this film came out, and when they had the photos of Branagh as Poirot, now Hercule Poirot is famous for his black, curled, Raleigh Fingers-esque mustache, and there is a more exaggerated version of the mustache in this, and it does not look like Albert Finney or Peter Ustinov or anybody. Everybody has their own favorite Hercule Poirot. I don't think anybody's favorite is going to be Sir Ken, except for Sir Ken.
And he will be obsessed with it.
So I know people. I knew people in this building that just got really upset about the mustache.
Really?
Yeah. And of course, I was like, the snobby film guy says, "Relax. There's a lot more things to be upset about. And by the way, there are a lot more things to be upset about with this movie than Kenneth Branagh's mustache in this.
That mustache may be the highlight of the film.
It is not the highlight of the film.
It's a supporting character.
It stands out. Boy, does it. But okay. I'm a fan of Branagh. I'm even intrigued by his misfires. Even something like Frankenstein or
wow,
yeah,
that's loyalty.
Well, interesting watching him, Dr. Frankenstein, with feathered hair rolling around in goo with Robert De Niro as the creature. If you are,
that's the stuff of nightmares.
I know. Okay. I didn't make it, but The thing about this film, people ask why they remake movies. Well, obviously, you remake a film because the mall crowd, let's face it, the younger people. And by the way, I don't know anybody under the age of 30 that's going to go see this, unless they are fans of Josh Gad.
Is anyone going to go see this?
She kind of shrugged her shoulders. She can go either way. But, you know, the mall crowd's not going to see this because everybody in it is old, except for Josh Gad and Daisy Ridley.
The Star Wars crowd
is not going to see this. No, I don't think they're going to see it. But it's also been 40 years, over 40 years since the 1974 version.
That's amazing.
And I kept thinking, it's for the most part well done. I was starting to lump it for a while in the Beauty and the Beast mode of it's well, sort of well made, but not really necessary. But there's a lot of flaws in this film that just have been eating at me. For one thing, I know Kobe would just kind of roll his eyes on this. This is a fine Agatha Christie story if you've never read Agatha Christie before in your life.
Oh.
And if this is your first time seeing Agatha Christie, I think people would still say rent the original 1974 Murder.
I was gonna say that.
But what it's
you wouldn't
missing,
move on to a second one. Okay.
Which we'll get to that. There's not a lot of fun in this. There are fun in Agatha Christie novel, whether it's Hercule Poirot or Miss Marple. They're fun.
They are great characters, actually.
And there's really good characters. And there's some good characters in here, but the tone is more serious than it really should be. And it's not completely at the fault of Sir Kenneth Branagh, who's the director of this. The screenplay has a lot to do with that. But there is a tone that the director brings it's a little more serious. It's a little more. There's a few action movie moments that I don't think are really necessary. There's a chase on a bridge. I don't think it's really all that necessary. And by the way, I'm going into this not reveal. We're not going to reveal the ending. I don't want to do that. No, shut
up. That's why I came here.
Shut up. You did not. You are not doing spoiler radio.
Didn't the butler do it in the?
Shut up. That's Clue. No, it's not Clue. Whatever. But. I will say that, you know, even it, especially when we get to the reveal, and Hercule Poirot, the character, has a really nice monologue. And that's the thing that the Christie films or the Christie stories are known for, is that the detective has a great monologue of showing off their brilliance on who did it and how they did it. Mm-hmm. And it's this one's not as long as Albert. Apparently, Albert Finney's version in 1974 is 8 pages.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it is really well done. This one, it seems shorter, but apparently there's a moral compass in this one. And it kind of brings the film down, but it's also 2017, and I guess you cannot. And if you know Murder on the Orient Express, you know what I'm talking about. So while it is a lighter tone in the Sidney Lumet version, apparently one cannot have fun with subject matter in 2017. I think that's vague enough to really.
That's so incredibly vague that there's not a single person going to decide to go see this film now.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe this is the best made mediocre film of 2017. Kind of like when I referred to Rocky Balboa as the best mediocre film of that year.
It's one of those films that's hard to review because it's so completely average.
And it should be more, especially with this cast. And there's some nice work.
I mean,
Judy
Dench won an Oscar for one scene. We know she can do more.
But even the scene that they have together, and the scene that Branagh and Jacoby, and probably because I know that they've known each other for decades and have worked together a lot. Penelope Cruz gets to play against type. Michelle Pfeiffer gets.
She's the most depressed missionary I've ever met in my entire life.
Oh, I don't know. Ingrid Bergman was fairly depressed, and she got an Oscar for hers in '74.
Wow.
So yeah, to clarify, Albert Finney is now played by Kenneth Branagh. Lauren Bacall is Michelle Pfeiffer. Ingrid Bergman is Penelope Cruz. Tony Perkins turns into Josh Gad.
Wow.
John Gielgud turns into Jerry Jacoby. So for you English stage fans, there's that.
This is kind of like the Aldi's version of the story.
Wow. So, but Richard, your thoughts? It sounds like you're in agreement with me, although I think you liked it less than I did.
I think I liked it less than you did. I gave it 2 stars.
If you do a rating system.
I do, yeah. You know, I do my ratings on the independentcritic.com. Thank you very much.
I would probably, I guess if I had to, I'd give it maybe a half more than you.
So kind of a recommend, because 2.5 is a recommendation for me.
Is it?
And I went just below that.
Gosh.
Now, keep in mind, I'm on a 4-star scale. So.
And a 4-wheel scale.
On a 4-wheel, yeah, exactly. That's just wrong.
Uh-huh.
They needed a wheelchair in this film. I think it would have spiked.
It's on a train. What more do you want?
Yeah, the train wasn't very good, though. Didn't you think it looked a lot like Polar Express?
You know what? That was the other thing. There was a few CG moments that really that took me out of the picture. Now, I understand for location purposes and price purposes, but there's a lot of CG in this.
There's
some,
a lot of CG.
Some better than others.
Most of them bad.
Yeah, there's a scene where Poirot is at the top of a train. It's not moving, but he's at the top of it. And the other thing, the other plot point is that there's an avalanche which stops the train in its tracks, literally.
Literally.
Proper use of literally. And then, you know, they have time to kill to figure out who, you know, for Poirot to figure out who did it. So they're stuck there. Nice.
Thank you.
But there is a scene where he's walking at the top of the train car, and it's just scream CG. And I guess the leaving of the station,
it's completely unnecessary. That's the worst part.
And I think there is, I think what Sir Ken wanted to do was he wanted to open it up as much as he could, which I think takes away the claustrophobic feel
exactly.
If you're stuck on a train. Now, I know in the 74 version with Sidney Lumet, which I have to admit I watched the day before watching this, I had revisited
wow.
it. But one of the challenges Lumet had was to actually film in a train car, I believe is what he did. Or
mm-hmm.
at least he built a set that was of train car size.
Mm-hmm.
He could have expanded it for convenience sake, but he didn't want to do that. There's in one of the special features of the 74 version, I know Jacqueline Bisset, who was in the original, talked about it. They took days to shoot one of the final scenes where Poirot was delivering this monologue because they had to cover all of the reaction shots of the
yeah.
dozen actors. So anyway, the film opens up a little more than the original, and
yeah.
it takes away some of that claustrophobic feel, and yeah, gives you more CG that you really didn't need.
So we didn't have the fun, we didn't have the suspense, we didn't have
and
the
I'm
thrills.
Still vaguely recommending it, apparently.
Yeah, it's just weird and twisted.
I guess.
I don't understand
I guess if,
that.
Yeah, so.
How did you feel about overall Branagh's performance, though?
He was fine. I think this is where I think of the revival thing.
Uh-huh.
His version of Poirot, it's not Albert Finney's, it's not Peter Ustinov's, it's not, oh God, the gentleman on TV that everybody loves. I will
that guy.
Yeah, I'll get to that. I know I'm terrible. And it's not Alfred Molina's, that's for sure.
Adam Sandler's?
Shut up. So yeah, I mean it's different than that. It's a little more. Oh, David Suchet. Am I saying that right? So no, he was
sure.
fine. There's moments of it. I mean, early on, like there's scenes where he's kind of giggling while reading Dickens of all things. There should have been more of that.
Yeah.
And he's not rotund, but he enjoys his excess a little
mm-hmm.
bit. The other thing I think it has slightly better than the original is in the 74 version, it takes like I think 20 minutes before you get on the train, before the train takes off.
True.
And I think, now I didn't have a stopwatch because I'm watching a movie.
Uh-huh.
They handled the intro almost like a Bond film because there's a case at the beginning that has nothing to do with the film you're about ready to watch.
Correct.
Just to show people how good Poirot is.
But see, that's probably not necessary. Supposed
either.
To establish his quirkiness and
his eccentricities and his brilliance.
And I didn't think it did.
It didn't?
I didn't think it did.
I thought it did.
I mean, okay, he solved the case, but, you know, I don't know.
Okay. But I think they got to, because there's a plot point, really doesn't give away with stuff. It's not the Lindbergh baby, but it's something similar.
True. Yeah.
That plays into it.
I did actually like that.
That's a part of the story.
Yeah.
But the Lumet version starts with that. And I think, so between that, introducing all of the characters before they get on the train. And I think it slows it down a little. But I think that's one thing that it has up on the 74 version, We get to, I think we get to the train, and now I could, you know what, somebody could have a stopwatch and I could be dead wrong, but that's how it felt to me.
I'm going
to
go back with a stopwatch.
I knew you would, and you're going to give the film more money, so there's that.
Oh, then I won't do that.
But, okay, so you know, he Richard didn't like it. I liked it slightly more. I guess I would say I would recommend seeing it, but cautious.
Take a Valium first,
or watch the original. I think we're all saying watch 1974 Sidney Lumet version. It's quite good. Now that being said, what? Richard, you said this is still the best film opening this weekend.
Well, I haven't seen Jane.
Yeah, I think that did open this weekend. I'm not 100%, but we're going to acknowledge it. The documentary Jane about chimpanzee researcher Jane Goodall.
Exactly.
Right. So, not Gall's sister.
I thought it was about Jane Hathaway, but
no. And then,
I guess
well,
I'm
then
wrong.
There was. I always remember there was the Anne Hathaway film Becoming Jane, but it's not about the creation of Nancy Culp. Chief,
ooh.
Right?
Wow.
By the way, so there is another origin story coming up soon in the next couple weeks. The Man Who Invented Christmas,
I'm looking forward to that.
Well, if you're a fan, I guess without giving away a whole lot, if you're a fan of Shakespeare in Love or Becoming Jane or...
Are there fans of Shakespeare in Love?
Shut up. Yeah, enough to get a Best Picture. anyway, so just so we mentioned, Jane is still in theaters. We like the art house, so I'm going to mention them.
We do. Yeah.
Killing of a Sacred Deer is still in theaters, as is Wonderstruck, as is Loving Vincent, as is The Florida Project, which you... really like, if I remember.
Florida Project is definitely in my top 10 for the year.
Wow. And there's still a month. Well, I mean, there's still a month to go, but there's still a month to go.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, the
creator.
I've
been down on a lot of the stuff that people have loved this year. So
you're that way every year.
I'm a hater. I admit that.
But you really like Florida Project.
I'm a public radio.
You're not a public radio hater. Is it better than American Honey? Because it's the same director.
Oh, it's vastly superior.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Because I liked American Honey, except for the scenes on the bus.
That's fair.
You know, you could have had less of those and made a shorter film, but mesmerizing.
American Honey did not make my top 10.
Wow. Okay. So anyway, so there are those. Now for the sake of the independent critic, and for the sake of this show, we appreciate it. You saw Daddy's.
That shows how much I care about you, Matt.
Thank you.
You know,
I appreciate it. You saw Daddy's Home, too.
I took the hit for you, man.
There are more daddies and there are more problems, but are there more laughs, Richard Probst? Now we're getting into Gene Shalit territory.
Please don't turn me into Gene Shalit. I'd rather be Gene Shalit than Rex Reed, though.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that.
You know.
And Ken Branagh's Poirot, better facial hair than Gene Shalit. So yes,
I hated this film so much.
more than Murder on the Orient Express.
I didn't hate Murder on the Orient Express. That was more apathy. This is pure hatred. And I'm a fan of Will Ferrell, first of all.
Just a reminder, it's Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg, their third film together.
Yes.
And John
and
Cena is there.
Yet to make a good one.
And ooh.
Yes.
So their stepdads who now like each other, but their own dads show up and in a bit of stunt casting, as the AV Club referred to, Mel Gibson still on his apology tour.
Oh, Lordy.
Playing Mark Wahlberg's dad, which makes sense, and John Lithgow, who we all like.
Is it possible to not like John Lithgow? I don't want to meet that person.
You know what? I bet I will say this. I bet there are... Okay, so earlier this year, he had the film with Salma Hayek.
Yeah.
That he plays a character who's a lot like... somebody in the White House.
Who would that be, Matt?
Kind of kind of a mogul. Anyway, but Beatrice at Dinner is the film, which you should check out.
Great film.
And I bet the people who would like John Lithgow in that or like John Lithgow in the Brian De Palma films probably aren't going to like him in The World According to Garp.
You think not?
Yeah, I think not.
It's a shame. It's probably his best film.
It's his first nomination, his only nomination, but quite good. Anyway.
Is that his only nomination?
I think so.
That's unjust.
No, I take it back. He was Terms of Endearment.
Oh, that's right.
So
okay.
He's got two on him.
Okay.
But anyway, so I thought really inspired, semi-inspired casting for a sequel because, of course, in a sequel you have to add more characters. I remember saying this about Meet the Fockers. It's like adding hot sauce to leftovers.
You had to be careful on that one, didn't you?
Yeah, it's like adding hot sauce or Parmesan to leftovers to give it a little something else. And so this in the form of Mel Gibson and John Lithgow, but it's not enough to warm over these leftovers.
It's just not. First of all, you have Mel Gibson, who is
Isn't he supposed to be an astronaut?
He's an astronaut. He's like a womanizer. He's like everything we're trying to forget about Mel Gibson.
Does he like Jews in this film?
He doesn't like much of anyone, and he's not real fond of his own son.
Great. I mean, that's right, because his son is soft, apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means Will Ferrell's character is double soft.
Exactly. And, of course, John Lithgow, who's even softer than Will Ferrell in this film.
Yes.
I mean, come on. When they greet, they kiss on the lips.
Clutch the pearls. You should do that in your own family.
So,
and this time, I think they're stuck. Somebody also, I think the AV Club would also refer to it. It has a Griswold-esque feel as far as the holidays.
It's kind of, yeah, I think that's kind of what it was going for. I think it could have been, I think my frustration, because I do think that there are people who are going to enjoy this film.
Yep.
I mean, if you
nobody
like
in this room.
If you like.
I thought Daddy's Home was okay. But there's a number of jokes.
Have
and
you
I,
been drinking first?
No. There are a number of physical jokes of an over-the-top mm-hmm. nature. And I think of in the first Daddy's Home, Will Ferrell in a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff I don't need. And, that's the selling point.
Yeah. I thought the strongest points in this film, I thought despite him doing a caricature of himself, Mel Gibson was probably the highlight of the film.
Really?
Yeah.
More than Lithgow.
He really just let go, and he played it, and he was relentless with it. And you could tell he was getting the tone of what they were going for. John Lithgow is fine in the film. I would say
it's nice for him to play something opposite. Because he gets relegated to heavies a lot.
He really does.
So nice.
He does that well. And
yeah,
this
does.
Is almost a... This is unfair. This is probably a bad comparison, but it's almost a twist on the kind of Garp kind of character because it's
all right.
Over the top. It's soft. It's
we don't expect him to go that far.
Yeah.
Okay. He's
I would
allowed
say
to cut
at times
loose.
He crossed the line into
really?
A little too much.
More than Third Rock.
I loved. I was such a Third Rock fan.
Okay. Because he had some ridiculous stuff to do in Third Rock.
But it was that side of Lithgow.
Okay.
Unquestionably. So
I guess if you haven't seen that in a while, that might be a fresh fresh return.
You know, and people are going to like it. You know, it's definitely got a – they spend – just like the first film, they spend most of the film hating each other. And you know where it's going to end up.
By the last reel.
Yeah, exactly. And there's even a song.
Oh, God. A group song?
A group song.
Oh, boy.
And it's lovey-dovey and warm and fuzzy and
great.
Completely unearned through the course of the film.
Mm-hmm.
But people are going to love it because it's that Christmas-themed film. There are going to be people probably exactly.
There's a hand gesture maybe we can't talk about.
I was going to say, that's not a public radio hand gesture.
No, it's not.
There are people who are going to probably resonate with the fact that these families are together for the holidays and they don't get along. And then you
they
throw
can
John
to
Cena
it.
In there.
Yeah, I was saying, how much time does Cena get in this?
Not as much, obviously, not as much as the others because he kind of shows up in the middle of the film.
Okay.
But he's, you know, and the hard part is you like all of these people. Well, except for maybe Gibson.
Right. Still on his apology tour.
You know, people like Wahlberg. I don't really know why. They obviously not listened to Marky Mark.
My daughter likes Mark Wahlberg.
Does she?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Emma. You just dropped down to a 98 in my esteem.
Wow. I'll let her know. Well, she hasn't done a whole lot of research, and it's not just the Funky Bunch stuff.
As long as she doesn't like the fact that he used to bash people's faces in.
I was not going to mention that, but you just did.
I did.
And by the way, later on in the show, we will talk about separating the artist from the art. That's a preview of that right there. So we're almost at the halfway mark here at Film Sociology. Matthew Soci hanging out with Richard Probst.
I see somebody trying to pull me off the air.
No, not true. But so, yeah, you're not recommend. Okay, is Daddy's Home 2 like worst 10 material for you?
Is Daddy's Home 2... I'm sorry. Say that again.
Is it worst 10 material?
It is. I gave it 1 star.
Ooh,
a
so
D
it's qualified.
In my book. So it's right on that line.
All right.
I think there are a few laughs in it. And again, I think that there will be people who like it more. I thought it could have been so much more.
But it's a sequel to a Will Ferrell.
You know, they're
film.
Trying to sell the idea of a softer that we can all get along, and they're just making fun of it the whole time, including making fun of the kids in the film, which is kind of a hands-off thing for me.
Oh.
And they do. They make fun of the kids
like,
in the film.
Like certain behavioral aspects of kids?
Well, you know, like the young boy in the film starts to kind of get an attraction to girls, and what do the men do? They proceed to make fun of him for it.
Ah, you know, okay, yeah, I know. There are a number of people. For example, Children in Peril.
Yeah.
That's kind of a deal breaker for a lot of people, whether it's action or horror.
Yeah.
So you're saying this is getting close into that?
So kind of, I think it trips some issues for me.
Okay, and, all right.
Yeah, so I think that's probably fair, and some people won't be as bothered by that.
All right, so there
you
go.
I call them tasteless.
Yes, you do. All right. So anyway, there you go. So there are some choices to be made, I guess, this weekend.
It might be a good time to go see Thor.
You know what? It's so funny. Did you like Thor?
I did like Thor.
Okay.
It's not my top 10, but I did like it.
You enjoyed it for what it is? All right. Yeah. We make fun of the weather in the Midwest and Indiana, but the drive-ins are still open.
That's amazing to me.
So, because I don't remember them being open this late.
I wish
late
we were kind of a call-in
up.
Show. I want to talk to somebody who goes to a drive-in in this weather.
We'll have to work it. You know what? If you're listening to this, go on. Yeah, I'm on Facebook or Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. Let me know if you've been to a drive-in after October.
That's amazing to me.
So anyway, yeah. At the Tibbs, Thor and Jigsaw.
Wow.
Ooh, that's a...
Together?
Together.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who wins?
I don't know. the producers. and the producers. So,
they're both profitable.
Screen
okay.
2, Daddy's Home 2.
Wow.
And Only the Brave.
Only the Brave go to see Daddy's Home 2.
Did you see Only the Brave? I don't know anybody who saw that. I don't remember if they reviewed that for us or not.
I don't think they did. I don't think so.
Interesting, because you have a really good cast in another. It's a natural disaster movie that does not have Mark Wahlberg. Yeah, does not have Mark Wahlberg or directed by Peter Berg.
Memorable it was.
Okay, moving on.
Okay.
Oh boy, Screen 3. A Bad Mom's Christmas with everyone's favorite Jim Beam representative, Mila Kunis.
Wow.
And Boo 2, Tyler Perry's.
We are
Boo
drinking
Two.
Jim Beam right here.
Yeah.
Right now.
No, okay. We're not. And then Screen 4, Murder on the Orient Express and The Mountain Between Us, which is the least
That's
likely
funny.
Drive-in movie of the week.
That's pretty funny, actually.
Idris Elba and Kate Winslet stuck on a mountain together. Keeping each other warm, we hope.
I think there are like 13 people who have seen that film.
Were you one of them?
I was not one of them.
I've been
in
rehearsals.
I don't think even their family
members
have seen
the
film.
So anyway, that's at the Tibbs. Over at the Skyline, now, nothing's listed on their page. Well, as far as now showing, I clicked on it and nothing came up. But
The Sound of Silence.
Very good,
Thank
Simon
you.
And Garfunkel. But December 1st and 2nd,
ooh,
they're going to be showing Christmas at the Skyline. And they're going to be showing the first Home Alone and A Christmas Story, December 1st and 2nd at the Skyline.
Wow.
I believe it's a charity show, a charity event. So anyway, that is, yeah, 1st and 2nd.
You should go to that. Let's all go to that.
I'm working on a show. Okay, over at IU Cinema. Again, this depends on when you're listening to the show.
We love IU Cinema.
We do. Saturday, November 11th at 3 p.m., so you could be hauling tail down to Bloomington right now. At 3 o'clock, American Alley, the 2008 documentary. At 7 p.m., as a part of the International Art House series, Polina from 2016.
That's a great film.
Polina is also being shown Sunday the 12th at 6:30 p.m. At 3 p.m., the documentary from 2008, Herb and Dorothy.
I haven't seen that one.
That's right. Monday the 13th, Tumble Down at 7 o'clock. And then Thursday the 16th at 6 p.m. as a part of the International Art House series, the D. Rees series, Mudbound at 6 o'clock and Pariah at 9:30.
Mudbound's got some great buzz going on.
Yep. Friday, November 17th at 7 p.m., Bessie. That's the Queen Latifah biopic, Queen Latifah as Bessie Smith.
Ooh, that would be great.
And then Night Song from 1948 at 3 o'clock on Saturday the 18th, as well as The Unknown Girl at 7 o'clock as part of the International Art House series on November 18th. So those are happening over there.
Cool.
Moving on to Blu-ray. The big title that's coming out on Blu-ray this week, Cars 3.
Wow.
Did you see Cars 3? I did not.
I did see Cars 3. And
did we... Who asked for it besides Disney?
I you know, it's...
Is it better than Cars 2?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I can safely say that.
Because now Lightning McQueen is older. Now, is it... the thing I remember about Cars 3 was it had a kind of a darker trailer. Because the teaser of it is Lightning McQueen about ready to crash, which is fun for a kid's film.
No, they have to learn about death at some point.
And so they're going to learn it
I
here.
I think, you know, Disney's more so qualified.
Even more so than the fake ending of Toy Story 3. The almost United 93 feels.
Wow.
Remember, you're like,
yeah,
that moment, you're like, are you really going to
go there?
Oh, okay, you don't. Is it that overt?
No, it's not that.
Okay.
No, it's not that
but
bad.
But apparently Lightning McQueen has to learn about aging in car years. Is that the case?
They used my car as an example.
Oh, God.
I did.
Uh-huh.
No, honestly, I can say I don't remember it a whole lot. I just remember thinking this was really completely unnecessary.
Yep.
Much like I felt at Murder on the Orient Express, which I love to keep saying.
Yes, you do. Speaking of Michelle Pfeiffer, a film...
Do you think Bruno Mars will see this film?
What, Murder on the Orient Express?
Yeah. Remember he goes, Michelle Pfeiffer, White Gold, in his Uptown Funk?
Anyway,
I can't believe you didn't get that reference.
I do a different
prime
show.
Comedy.
I do a different show on Saturday night, so different genre. But speaking of Michelle Pfeiffer, from one of her films from 1985 is now on Blu-ray. If you need Into the Night with Jeff Goldblum and Michelle Pfeiffer, directed by John Landis, Criterion has put out The Philadelphia Story.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That would be really good. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't get any endorsement money for this. I'm just letting you know, the month of November, Criterion's are 50% off.
Wow.
Whether you go to a store or you go online and order them.
Really?
There you go. So
you only have to get half a mortgage.
There you go. also out on Blu-ray, Aubrey Plaza stalking film Ingrid Goes West from 2017.
A good film.
You did?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
That one, I think she goes to meet people that she met online. She connected with online.
That's worth seeing. I think you should get that.
I think people who did that, who would do that for me, would not look like Aubrey Plaza, so I'm not. Let's see. Some other older titles. Death Rides a Horse, if you need 60. Lee Van Cleef Spaghetti Western on Blu-ray.
Wow.
Killing Ground. The Mercenary. I think that's Franco Nero from 1968. From 1971.
What?
Summer of 42.
Wow.
With the visually stunning Jennifer O'Neill. And as somebody reminded me, this along with the Sam Elliott film Lifeguard, two of the noted statutory rape films of the 1970s. Summer of 42 is they're in high school, and we have a lonely high school boy who develops.
Do you think they're timing that intentionally?
We'll get to that. Again, we're going to talk about separating the artist from the art in a little bit. But yeah, he falls for a woman whose husband is overseas in the World War II. It's a very tender love story if you don't think about the paperwork. So there's that.
Wow.
The Mystery Science Theater Revival is now out on Blu-ray, if you need that.
I don't.
I would not mind having that.
Really?
So yeah, I did like the revival. It was good.
Cool.
And,
okay,
of course, they are going to do a Mystery Science Theater marathon on Thanksgiving, I believe, courtesy of Shout Factory. So you can go check that out as well.
Since they do all those turkeys anyway.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right. I want to get to dead people we like because we don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Who do we like that's dead?
And I've missed a few. I've missed the last few weeks because of other things. I had a
people who were living.
I did a very special show last week, but we've not talked about Robert Guillaume.
Oh man,
yeah, that was
sad.
A bump. Well, and 89,
yes,
and full career, and people should never forget, musical guy.
Yeah,
he's, you know, it was
intensely talented,
very talented. As Kayla, my buddy Kayla Jackson knows, her favorite Phantom of Phantom of the Opera.
Wow,
but
that's not saying much in my world.
But he was. I remember there was he was a part of the noted '70s revival. It was an all African American production of Guys and Dolls.
Wow,
this was before Soap, and of course, yes, he's known for Soap and Benson. But
he's great in Benson.
He's really, really good. And so, but this is not a TV show. This is a film show. So, what did he work on when he wasn't doing television?
What did he work on, Matt?
I'm glad you asked that. His third credit, he did an episode. Well, he started with Porgy and Ween. I don't think it has anything to do with Bess. did an episode of Julia. Did an episode of Marcus Welby. But played Jordan Gaines in 1973's Superfly TNT, directed by and starring Ron O'Neill. Yeah, I own Superfly TNT.
Do you really?
I think Criterion should put a Superfly and Superfly TNT collection out.
I would buy that one.
Just like I think Criterion should do a Blackula, Scream collection, but that's just me. And did a number of TV films, a lot of TV, of course. Seems like old times. Of course, the Goldie Hawn... Chevy Chase film, After Foul Play. Yep.
Okay. Yep.
Prince Jack, Wanted Dead or Alive, They Still Call Me Bruce. The other great scene, I think quite possibly my favorite cinematic moment with Robert Guillaume, mm-hmm. is him going toe-to-toe with Morgan Freeman in Lean on Me.
Why would you talk about toe-to-toe with me?
I'm sorry. I know I said that.
Okay, what was that movie again? I'm sorry.
Lean on Me.
I got obsessed with the put joke.
Yeah, I know
I'm
you
sorry.
Did. You're just jealous because you didn't make it.
I know. I'm not going toe-to-toe
it's
with
Morgan,
anyone.
Morgan Freeman is Joe Clark. Remember
really?
The tough school
yeah.
principal? And
oh, I remember that.
Yeah, there's...
Robert Guillaume was for in that?
He was...
Was he the bad guy?
No, he was the doctor. He was the Dr. Frank Napier. He was the school superintendent.
Oh.
And of course, I'm going to word this carefully. For a lot of people of my background, we learned what HNIC stood for, and Robert Guillaume.
You're really pushing the envelope here.
Yeah, Robert Guillaume and Morgan Freeman have an argument over who is that title, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Wow.
Other films, of course, Death Warrant. He of course was one of the voices in The Lion King.
Who was he in The Lion King?
Rafiki.
Really?
Yes.
Cool.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So,
wow.
But anyway, Spy, and of course, stuff like Spy Hard and First Kid. He was all. There got to a point where if you needed an authoritative figure and he had to have a little bit of clout, there was that. And he also should be noted, was a part of a really underrated and underappreciated series called Sports Night, where he played one of the executives and had a stroke and came back and still did a show and kept working. Even after a stroke, for years.
Not even Tim Curry can say that.
So anyway, but yeah, big salute to Robert Guillaume.
He's listening, I'm sure.
Academy Award winning costume designer John Mollo passed away at the age of 86. His first credit, he won an Oscar for best costume design.
Wow.
For Star Wars.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you get that as your first credit in costuming?
And then you get an award for it. So he had quite the run for a good 15 years, actually almost 20 years. And he wound up doing some TV movies in the 90s and the 100s, if you're a fan of Horatio Homeblower. But here we go. Star Wars, Alien, Empire Strikes Back, Outland. Got a second Academy Award for Gandhi. There was more than
How
sheets,
much costume
folks.
Was in Gandhi?
I was about to say, there are more than sheets, folks. The English characters. Lords of Discipline, Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes, King David, Revolution, Cry Freedom, Hannah's War, White Hunter, Black Heart, Air America, Chaplin, the Disney Three Musketeers, the 1994 Jungle Book, and then the 1997 space horror film Event Horizon.
That's amazing.
That's not a bad stretch.
And he started with Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's just mind-boggling to me.
Let's see. Academy Award-winning cinematographer Walter Lassily, hope I'm saying that right, died at the age of 90.
Wow.
Was noted for doing Elektra from 1962, Tom Jones in 1963, won an Academy Award for Zorba the Greek in 1964. Other noted films, The Day the Fish Came Out, To Kill a Clown, The Wild Party, The Pilot, Heat and Dust. He did Private School with Phoebe Cates and then did The Bostonians.
Wow.
Indians.
Private School had amazing lensing.
Uh-huh. Indian Summer, Ballad of the Sad Cafe, and others. And then,
so really, he had like one good film.
No, he had a few. Didn't have Phoebe Cates in it.
Walter, we do miss you, though.
Sylvia Christopher, for that matter. And, of course, earlier this week...
Phoebe went to the funeral?
Maybe. John Hellerman, for you fans of Magnum P.I., of course.
Yeah.
And, of course, if you're a fan of Blazing Saddles, played Howard Johnson. Howard Johnson is right. It was also one of the... kind of one of the semi-regular players for Peter Bogdanovich. Appeared in films like Lawman. Was one of the teachers in The Last Picture Show. Was the hotel manager in What's Up, Doc? Honky, The Carey Treatment, Skyjacked, High Plains Drifter, which I really liked. He was the bootmaker.
Yeah.
Was the deputy in Paper Moon.
I love that movie.
Yeah,
that's one of my kid films. I love that movie as a kid.
Chinatown. And I'm hoping to get him on the show, Peter Bogdanovich, again, because he was Rodney James.
Too late. He's dead, man.
I know. Peter's not dead. But he played Burt Reynolds' chauffeur in At Long Last Love, and we got to see him do a little sing and dance. Day of the Locust, Lucky Lady, Audrey Rose, Sunburn, from 1979.
Wow.
So anyway, constantly where he played Dean Birch in Up the Creek from 1984. I remember that. And his last credit, from 1996, played Dr. Whitehead in a Very Brady sequel. But, of course, most will remember
him as...
That's
a really sad way to end.
As Higgins from Magnum P.I. So, salute.
Can you imagine that being the last credit? I'm fascinated by last credits.
Gene Hackman doesn't know what you're talking about. All right. We're in the home stretch of film sociology. Of course, Richard Probst is hanging out with me. Richard Probst, I guess we've alluded to it a little bit.
What?
And I will ask you the question, sir, because I think everybody has their own answer and to their own degree of the answer, especially in lieu of recent activities in the news. How are you, sir, on separating the artist from the art?
You know, that's an interesting...
Also known as Kevin Spacey and Louis C.K. and the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad week.
Oh, man.
The Weinsteins and James Toback and Jeffrey Tambor, apparently.
And Woody Allen.
And, well, that's been decades. So
you know, and I still haven't forgiven him.
Where do you draw the line on separating the artist from the art?
Well, you know, you know that I'm an activist.
Yes.
I do a lot of stuff in the area of violence prevention.
Of any kind.
Domestic violence, sexual violence. And so all of this has really been challenging for me.
Did you take all of your copies of House of Cards and throw them out?
I have never seen House of Cards.
Okay.
So
did you take your copy of The Usual Suspects and American Beauty and toss them?
You know, it's interesting because my temptation with the independent critic is to say I'm not going to review a film if it involves someone who is a known offender.
Okay. Continue.
But in these situations, you know, you have people with a lot of allegations and, you know, it's still all playing out. And so now some of them have actually acknowledged things, like, you know, Louis C.K.
Oh, boy.
Came out with his acknowledgement this afternoon.
Oh, really? We're recording this on Friday. So,
okay. Sorry.
No,
okay.
Because I know earlier in the week that his next film, the squirm-inducing I Love You, Daddy, had been pulled from the New York Film Festival, and I think is now the release is being delayed.
Actually, the orchard has said it's not coming out.
It's not coming out, period.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay.
And realize they were in the middle of doing PR for it. I mean, some of us critics here in Indiana had just gotten the link to the film.
And now we're not going to be able to
watch it. I had just watched it.
Did you?
I have watched it.
And okay.
It is creepy. It is in...
Okay, I Love You, Daddy is Louis C.K., and it's kind of a weird homage to Manhattan, where he's got a 17-year-old daughter, played by Chloe Grace Moretz, who is having an affair, or actually may be having an affair with a 60-something filmmaker played by John Malkovich. Now, I'm guessing this because I've read up on it. I've not seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the kind of a twist on the Woody Allen character. John Malkovich is not Woody Allen. But is there moments of the dad feeling uncomfortable about his very attractive teenage daughter?
Very, very, very much.
And I got a feeling that they were trying to push the Woody Allen aspect of the film forward so that this lower one, literally and figuratively, lower subplot doesn't get publicized as much.
For me, it was so obvious that I was amazed that a studio, admittedly an indie studio.
And he, of course, Louis C.K. directed this as well as produced it, I believe.
I believe he did. And they picked The Orchard picked it up at TIFF, Toronto International Film Festival.
And they played it. Yeah, it was kind of unexpectedly released at the festival.
Yeah.
Much to everybody's chagrin. So I guess, would it have been better if they had taken out the dad feelings about the daughter?
I think
if
so.
If it was just a nod and a nudge against Woody Allen types?
No, it's not a horrible, horrible film. There's that part of me that can be objective and watch the film and say, okay, no, this is not a horrible film, but I can still say it's a creepy film.
Yes.
You know, it's, you know, and admittedly, sometimes I struggle with how you review those.
Sure, sure, sure.
But... you know, this film's even in black and white. I mean, it's obviously...
So, yeah, another homage to Manhattan.
Exactly. I mean, it's clearly an homage to Manhattan, and I was kind of amazed it was picked up. I thought that undercurrent was so obvious, and maybe because... You know, I'd heard things about Louis C.K. before.
And it was one of those things that... And it's like it with Weinstein, it's like it with Spacey, where now that... There has been, now that the ceiling has been broken, people are now saying, oh, yeah, we knew that.
Yeah.
And especially with the Weinstein thing. And of course, I think Family Guy and other, there's been another series that have been making Spacey jokes for years. And, yeah, so it's been, the Louis C.K. stuff has been another kind of inside joke in the industry.
Yeah. So it just I don't know. I'm almost relieved I don't have to review it, though I'm tempted to review it anyway.
Anyway, just so you can say.
Yeah, I mean it's okay. Interesting.
What about the fact that they're going to reshoot the entire Louis C.K. film, but they're going to use Christopher Plummer?
Is that Louis? That's not. That's Spacey.
That's
okay.
Spacey. Yeah.
Like, wait, bad.
Welcome to Inappropriate Joke. That's about as bad a joke as I'm going to do, and there's only 8 minutes left in the show.
Oh,
so,
that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think The Onion already did where, like, everybody will be replaced by Christopher Plummer, who's done anything bad in the film industry. So.
Oh, man. He's, you know, you kind of wonder at this point. It's like, okay, who's going to be next?
There's a film that Ridley Scott directed that Spacey is in. But
All
he's,
the money he, in the world.
Right. And he's got a supporting role. And it's supposed to be released next month, and they're still apparently going to go through with it, but they're going to recast Christopher Plummer in the Spacey role. Now, what I've heard is the Spacey section only took about 8 or 9 days to shoot.
That's so
they
heard.
Can do it.
Yeah.
But this kind of sets a precedent as far as quick turnaround. Yeah.
I can't imagine it's going to be good, and I'm not sure it speaks well to the quality of the film.
And I think now that they're going to shoot this, it's going to have the film's going to have a black eye regardless.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't
know. So I would say don't hate Christopher Plummer on this one. He's doing, you know, he's got an impossible job to do.
He probably shouldn't have been picked originally. Well, and doesn't do much wrong.
That's the joke of now he's going to be taking over for everybody doing bad stuff. Because I'm a big Woody Allen film. I still am.
Yeah.
I still watch his stuff. My daughter watches his stuff. My daughter knows the stuff.
Uh-huh.
Knows the background history.
So
I think I can separate the art from the artist a little easier. I'm not. Uh-huh. This is not bragging. This is just me.
No, that's...
because on the on one end, I can still watch Chinatown. Uh-huh. I can still watch Rosemary's Baby.
Okay.
I can watch Roman Polanski films easier than I can listen to Michael Jackson music.
Wow.
A little.
I'm not real fond of either one.
Well,
but,
yeah. So, oh. I mean, but that's the thing. So, and the flip side, and of course, it's the awareness factor, because I think for every person that has been outed in this case, there are dozens, obviously, that we don't know about.
Exactly. Now,
and, of course, it's moments like this that will hopefully shine more light on what has been happening in our society.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's interesting when you think about the fact that Weinstein has been removed from the Producers Guild. He's, mm-hmm.
Well, I would say that's the other thing. So could you watch a film directed by or produced or, yeah, produced or released by a Weinstein? Could you watch, can you go back and watch Miramax films? Think about that.
I thought about that when I started thinking, should I remove these films from my site? It's like, that would be removing a lot of films.
Mm-hmm.
And
of course, it's the producer. I guess it's a different aspect if it's Polanski,
it's
the director.
He's never done anything else. He's not directed. He just got
the financing.
Yeah.
So.
Which I think is a relevant issue.
What I'm acknowledging, and I'm slightly playing devil's advocate, and I'm not trying to be, I'm better than you because I have the art thing, but there's a lot of gray area here.
I agree.
So I agree with that. And I think what we're living in a times where I think there is a lot of black and a lot of white. But there's a lot of gray area. It's like saying I can listen to this, but I can't listen to that.
I almost feel like though there's this purging going on where they're getting rid of a few bad cats that they probably already wanted to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of bothers me because it's like, okay, Weinstein hasn't actually been convicted of anything.
No.
Whereas Polanski's a convicted rapist,
and he's. He hasn't been in the country for decades.
And
they're still trying to extradite. Yeah. Afterwards. Yeah, long
but
after.
But still, I mean, mm-hmm. if we're going to punish people for the, like Spacey. Spacey's actions mostly have all been in the past.
Mm-hmm. And there's been said there's never a bad time to come out.
There's a bad time.
That's
to come
an exception.
Out.
That's Spacey.
As opposed to Louis C.K., who. Released this brilliant letter that was wonderfully written that owns his behavior.
Okay.
And
he did say, there's a really well done New York Times article about the victim speaking out on this that Louis C.K. did apologize, but that's in private. That was in private between them.
Exactly.
Right.
And it doesn't excuse anything,
no.
But it's, I don't know. I'm not as far away from you as you might think.
Okay, and I think everybody is their own judge, jury, and executioner in their own.
Can
head.
I execute?
No, you cannot.
Oh man!
No!
You got my hopes all.
I understand, but I think everybody in their own mind is their own judge, jury, and some of us speak on it, some of us do nothing about it, some of us act on it.
Yeah.
So
true.
So I guess that's where that I think it's okay to have gray area. I guess is what I'm saying.
What are you trying to say?
It's okay to have gray area as opposed to black or white.
Okay.
And
so
black
I don't
and
have
white
to get rid of all my Weinstein DVDs.
No. And of course, I say this knowing I have a copy of Last Tango in Paris I have not been able to watch for a long time.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Especially after she had Pat Maria Schneider had passed away and word got out.
Yeah.
And it's there.
It's amazing how the individual of cases impact us individually.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the beauty. I think that's the complexity of the art that we cover.
Yeah.
So
I agree
it affects us indifferently. So, all right, Richard, we got a few minutes left. Please tell us what is happening with the November December edition of your Tenderness tour.
Okay,
please uplift the show.
Well, as I noted, if you want an update on Tenderness Tour, visit tendernesstour.com. Right now, we're working on. I run a project where I list child victims of violence, and I have. Children listed from every state in 92 different countries. I'm starting a project called the Labyrinth Project, and we're building a labyrinth. And the first one's going to be here in Indianapolis, so I'm looking for a space to do that and hoping that'll happen here in the next few months, at least getting it started. Looking at a tour, my plan is for 2018. I'm 52 years old this year, so I'm going to do a 5K, 52 5Ks in 2018.
Oh, my God. One a week.
So it's going to be a rough week.
You put chains on your tires? Especially in the winter.
Oh, man. So it'll be a good year. And if you want to get involved with that, I'm hoping to go all over the state of Indiana.
Let me know when you're in Wayne County.
Oh, I love going to Wayne County.
Yes, you do. Earlham represent.
Earlham represent. Exactly. Well, I went there for grad school.
That's right.
Yeah, so... Yeah, and I will also plug that the Independent Critic is currently doing a ticket giveaway. Three billboards in Ebbing, Missouri.
The Frances McDormand film with Woody Harrelson.
Getting lots and lots of Oscar buzz. If you go to theindependentcritic.com, you can click on a link and get a pair of tickets for a screening on Thursday the 16th at 7 p.m. at Landmark Keystone Art.
Very good. And, of course, you can go to theindependentcritic.com. Yeah. .com. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time. Here are some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
See, I still play Charlton Heston. Anyway, we're not getting into that. So please don't let there be anything bad behind Zardoz. And of course, there was a Barbara Walters interview with Sean Connery. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of around us. So go see a good movie. You deserve it. Richard, always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Anytime. Well, almost anytime. We'll see. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan. Don't forget, folks, the Indianapolis LGBT Film Festival is happening November 10th through the 12th, depending on when you listen to this. IndieLGBTFilmFest.com. Better late than never, gang. Sorry. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!